English Listening Comprehension Test, Spring 2008, Advanced Level. This test is in four parts. Part 4 has separate directions. In Parts 1, 2, and 3, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear part one twice. First, listen to it straight through.
It's a pleasure to introduce an interesting speaker this morning with a story you won't believe. John Mickelson is here to tell us something that must be true. It's so crazy no one could have made it up. John?
Are you one of the lucky ones who's received an email that reads something like the following? Just a quick note to tell you about a program that Nike started to help make tracks and playgrounds for the underprivileged from old tennis shoes. All you have to do is send in your old tennis shoes with a piece of paper that has your name and address on it, and Nike will send you a brand new pair back free of cost. The tennis shoes you send do not have to be Nike. Please send in your shoes and pass this along to anyone and everyone. Folks, there are no free shoes. What you're dealing with here is a hoax, a prank, a con. And while running after that mirage, ordinary people can be persuaded to do the weirdest things. These days, that includes mailing off 100 pairs of old shoes a day to Nike. If you're a pipe dreamer enough to send your old kickabouts to Nike, you'll get back a nice letter informing you that though they really do have a program where old shoes are ground up and used to build tracks and playgrounds, they don't replace the donated pair with a new one. You'll be asked if you'd like your old shoes to go to that program, or if you'd prefer to have them mailed back to you. Ha! Rad! This time, the hoax is on Nike, in that the ordinary Joes conned into this at least get their shoes back, or get to donate them as they'd wanted to all along. It's Nike that has had to divert staff time and company resources to combating this latest round of internet madness. Can you imagine repackaging hundreds of pairs of smelly shoes? So, where did this hoax come from? Perhaps it was someone's idea of a lighthearted prank. More likely, it was a genuine misunderstanding of the existing recycling program, Reuse a Shoe. That's the way things go these days. But back in the winter of 1998, Nike had to repulse another such hoax aimed at them. In this one, Nike was said to be awarding $120 gift certificates to random participants in another firm's email tracking test. Thousands of copies of hopeful emails made their way not only to the fake address given in the hoax email, but hundreds also came to Nike's real online address, creating a royal mess. Okay. So a few employees have to be put to fielding a few phone calls and repackaging some shoes. What's so terrible about that? Beyond the staffing problems, these hoaxes generate very real public relations disasters for the firm being victimized. Telling customers, no go, no way, is never good for business. Nike's website now carries a disclaimer webpage about these hoaxes. As such, Nike never sends email to people who don't email it first. The company now recommends that those who receive an email, supposedly from Nike, visit their website to verify its authenticity. And keep in mind that anyone wanting to see their old sneakers end up as something other than landfill can send them to Nike's Reuse a Shoe. Or you can give them to your kid sister. But really, I know where most of them will end up. I figure that virtually everyone will take the easiest way out of getting rid of them. And hey, can you imagine, on a very hot day, the smell of running on a track made of old sneakers? Way too much.
Now listen to this same talk in five sections. Look at questions one and two.
It's a pleasure to introduce an interesting speaker this morning with a story you won't believe. John Mickelson is here to tell us something that must be true. It's so crazy no one could have made it up. John?
Are you one of the lucky ones who's received an email that reads something like the following? Just a quick note to tell you about a program that Nike started to help make tracks and playgrounds for the underprivileged from old tennis shoes. All you have to do is send in your old tennis shoes with a piece of paper that has your name and address on it, and Nike will send you a brand new pair back free of cost. The tennis shoes you send do not have to be Nike. Please send in your shoes and pass this along to anyone and everyone.
Answer questions 1 and 2, then look at questions 3 and 4.
Folks, there are no free shoes. What you're dealing with here is a hoax, a prank, a con. And while running after that mirage, ordinary people can be persuaded to do the weirdest things. These days, that includes mailing off 100 pairs of old shoes a day to Nike. If you're a pipe dreamer enough to send your old kickabouts to Nike, you'll get back a nice letter informing you that though they really do have a program where old shoes are ground up and used to build tracks and playgrounds, they don't replace the donated pair with a new one. You'll be asked if you'd like your old shoes to go to that program, or if you'd prefer to have them mailed back to you. Huh? Rad!
Answer questions 3 and 4. Look at questions 5 and 6.
This time, the hoax is on Nike, in that the ordinary Joes conned into this at least get their shoes back, or get to donate them as they'd wanted to all along. It's Nike that has had to divert staff time and company resources to combating this latest round of internet madness. Can you imagine repackaging hundreds of pairs of smelly shoes? So, where did this hoax come from? Perhaps it was someone's idea of a lighthearted prank. More likely, it was a genuine misunderstanding of the existing recycling program, Reuse a Shoe. That's the way things go these days.
Answer questions 5 and 6, then look at questions 7 and 8.
But back in the winter of 1998, Nike had to repulse another such hoax aimed at them. In this one, Nike was said to be awarding $120 gift certificates to random participants in another firm's email tracking test. Thousands of copies of hopeful emails made their way not only to the fake address given in the hoax email, but hundreds also came to Nike's real online address, creating a royal mess. Okay, so a few employees have to be put to fielding a few phone calls and repackaging some shoes. What's so terrible about that? Beyond the staffing problems, these hoaxes generate very real public relations disasters for the firm being victimized. Telling customers, no go, no way, is never good for business.
Answer questions 7 and 8. Look at questions 9 and 10.
Nike's website now carries a disclaimer webpage about these hoaxes. As such, Nike never sends email to people who don't email it first. The company now recommends that those who receive an email, supposedly from Nike, visit their website to verify its authenticity. And keep in mind that anyone wanting to see their old sneakers end up as something other than landfill can send them to Nike's Reuse a Shoe. Or you can give them to your kid sister. But really, I know where most of them will end up. I figure that virtually everyone will take the easiest way out of getting rid of them. And hey, can you imagine, on a very hot day, the smell of running on a track made of old sneakers? Way too much.
Answer questions 9 and 10. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
We are happy to have Joan Bridgestone with us to speak about fair trade and organic foods. Joan, are people filling their trolleys at the supermarket with ethical products?
Yes, they are. Sales of organic, fair trade, and local food are growing fast. Such food allows shoppers to express their political concerns every time they shop. Your trolley can be a statement. I'm choosing to help the world's poor, the farmers. And this is a clear message. Consumers have more power than they realise. They're at one end of the supply chain, farmers are at the other. The message is sent back all the way through that complicated supply chain.
But isn't organic food better for the environment?
Well, this turns out to be controversial. Most definitions of organic involve harsh restrictions on the use of synthetic pesticides and fertilisers. The most famous critic, Norman Borlaug, father of the Green Revolution, is an outspoken supporter of the use of synthetic fertilisers. Organic farming produces smaller amounts and smaller crops, so it requires more land to produce the same amount of food. Global grain production has tripled since the 60s, but the amount of land used increased by very little. Using traditional techniques such as compost and manure would have required a tripling of the area under cultivation. With intensive farming, there is more room left for rainforest.
Isn't it true that the artificial fertilizer used in conventional farming is made using natural gas, which is completely unsustainable?
Still, organic farming actually requires more energy per ton of food produced because yields are lower and weeds are reduced by ploughing them with a tractor. And it should be kept in mind that only one-fifth of the energy associated with food production is used on the farm. Apparently, the most environmentally friendly form of agriculture would be so-called no-till farming, which means no ploughing with tractors. Then weed control is with herbicides. On the other hand, for disease control of crops, organic farming uses a heavy metal, copper.
Well then, what about fair trade?
Its aim is to stop the injustice of low prices by guaranteeing that Fairtrade's own producers receive an above-market, so-called fair trade price for their produce. This is a big business. There is, in reality, overproduction of products like coffee and bananas, so this practice drives the price down. Paying a guaranteed fair trade premium, meaning a subsidy, encourages more production. So the non-fair trade producers, who are always a majority, receive even less for their coffee. And there's more.
Well, what else happens?
Well, guaranteeing a minimum price also means there is no reason to improve quality. So coffee drinkers find that the taste of fair trade brews varies widely. But perhaps the main objection to fair trade is that when you buy a cup of fair trade in a coffee bar, only 10% of the enormous extra you pay goes to the producer.
What about local food then? Does it get around this problem?
Well, buying local food direct means producers get a fair price. There are no middlemen marking up prices along the distribution chain. There are, after all, fewer of what we call food miles associated with local food. We should remember that food, even simple food, involves very complex issues.
Now listen to the same discussion in five sections. Look at questions 11 and 12.
We are happy to have Joan Bridgestone with us to speak about fair trade and organic foods. Joan, are people filling their trolleys at the supermarket with ethical products?
Yes, they are. Sales of organic, fair trade and local food are growing fast. Such food allows shoppers to express their political concerns every time they shop. Your trolley can be a statement. I'm choosing to help the world's poor, the farmers. And this is a clear message. Consumers have more power than they realise. They're at one end of the supply chain, farmers are at the other. The message is sent back all the way through that complicated supply chain.
Answer questions 11 and 12, then look at questions 13 and 14.
But isn't organic food better for the environment?
Well, this turns out to be controversial. Most definitions of organic involve harsh restrictions on the use of synthetic pesticides and fertilizers. The most famous critic, Norman Borlaug, father of the Green Revolution, is an outspoken supporter of the use of synthetic fertilizers. Organic farming produces smaller amounts and smaller crops, so it requires more land to produce the same amount of food. Global grain production has tripled since the 60s, but the amount of land used increased by very little. Using traditional techniques such as compost and manure would have required a tripling of the area under cultivation. With intensive farming, there is more room left for rainforest.
Answer questions 13 and 14. Look at questions 15 and 16.
Isn't it true that the artificial fertilizer used in conventional farming is made using natural gas, which is completely unsustainable?
Still, organic farming actually requires more energy per ton of food produced because yields are lower and weeds are reduced by ploughing them with a tractor. And it should be kept in mind that only 1/5 of the energy associated with food production is used on the farm. Apparently, the most environmentally friendly form of agriculture would be so-called no-till farming, which means no ploughing with tractors. Then weed control is with herbicides. On the other hand, for disease control of crops, organic farming uses a heavy metal, copper.
Answer questions 15 and 16, then look at questions 17 and 18.
Well then, what about fair trade?
Its aim is to stop the injustice of low prices by guaranteeing that fair trade's own producers receive an above-market, so-called fair trade price for their produce. This is a big business. There is, in reality, overproduction of products like coffee and bananas, so this practice drives the price down. Paying a guaranteed fair trade premium, meaning a subsidy, encourages more production. So the non-fair trade producers, who are always a majority, receive even less for their coffee. And there's more.
Answer questions 17 and 18. Look at questions 19 and 20.
Well, what else happens?
Well, guaranteeing a minimum price also means there is no reason to improve quality. So coffee drinkers find that the taste of fair trade brews varies widely. But perhaps the main objection to fair trade is that when you buy a cup of fair trade in a coffee bar, only 10% of the enormous extra you pay goes to the producer.
What about local food then? Does it get around this problem?
Well, buying local food direct means producers get a fair price. There are no middlemen marking up prices along the distribution chain. There are, after all, fewer of what we call food miles associated with local food. We should remember that food, even simple food, involves very complex issues.
Answer questions 19 and 20. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear five short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 21.
What are you doing over there, John?
I'm just looking at this package that arrived in the morning mail.
Well, what is it?
I don't know.
Open it up.
I've been trying to do just that for the last 5 minutes, but it's got this really strong tape around it.
Why don't you just grab a pair of scissors?
Answer question 21, then look at question 22.
What were you doing at the meeting yesterday, Carol?
What are you referring to?
I have to say, no, I can't bring myself to say it.
No, don't hold back. Just spit it right out.
Weren't you trying to steal the show? I mean, at least to some extent.
Well, you're being cheeky, and that's coming from a fellow who presented his plan of action as if it were something altogether new.
Well, it was.
Whatever.
Answer question 22, look at question 23.
The world has changed quite a bit since Chernobyl.
Yes, I agree. That nuclear disaster back in 1986 was a turning point in many respects.
Well, I agree with that viewpoint. But I find myself increasingly disturbed by the simplistic explanations made of the event.
I know what you mean. I was just reading an article summarizing the main scientific studies carried out around Chernobyl since the meltdown. You were probably reading the same report.
Yeah, what an eye-opener.
Answer question 23, then look at question 24.
You know, we had a difficult time at the birthday party last night. Bill was out of sorts.
Yes, Bill is the kind of fellow you have to handle with kid gloves. And he's always like that.
I know. And I know he's married to your sister. But maybe we should just avoid him.
Answer question 24. Look at question 25.
Did you read about Brad Garlinghouse from Yahoo?
You mean Yahoo? The enormous internet company?
Yes. Well, Brad is one of the company's senior vice presidents. For example, he's in charge of their homepage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone looks at that page at least once a day.
Brad comes from a family of 5 children. He says that helps him get along in the fast-paced world of internet business. And his sister Meg also works at Yahoo. Their 8-year-old niece thinks Brad's job is to get coffee for her Aunt Meg. She recently asked Brad what he does when he's not taking her aunt coffee.
That's a real misconception.
Answer question 25. This is the fourth part of the test. There are 5 sections. Each section is a separate piece of news. You will hear each section twice, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A. Listen to this section.
2 new studies suggest that an occasional helping of eggs and bacon may actually be good for you. Both of these foods are high in choline. Choline helps to prevent heart disease. And a deficiency of choline could lead to DNA damage and an increased risk of cancer. To top it off, choline is important in forming one of the key building blocks of memory. What if you're not a fan of greasy breakfasts? Don't worry, you can get your choline from liver, beans, wheat germ, and soy.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
2 new studies suggest that an occasional helping of eggs and bacon may actually be good for you. Both of these foods are high in choline. Choline helps to prevent heart disease. And a deficiency of choline could lead to DNA damage and an increased risk of cancer. To top it off, choline is important in forming one of the key building blocks of memory. What if you're not a fan of greasy breakfasts? Don't worry, you can get your choline from liver, beans, wheat germ, and soy.
Read question B. Question B, listen to this section.
Hello, my name is John Brown. I just read an article about the Gulf Stream in the American Scientist. Now, it said the Gulf Stream is a warm river flowing through a cold ocean, and as we all know, that's the old way of looking at it. In reality, it's the boundary between the warm water to its east and south and cold water to its west and north. Such language as heat transported by the Gulf Stream, well, that's meaningless. Heat is a mode of energy transport, like work. It's certainly not a seawater property that is transported by a current. I'm sure you get my drift.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
Hello, my name is John Brown. I just read an article about the Gulf Stream in The American Scientist. Now, it said the Gulf Stream is a warm river flowing through a cold ocean, and as we all know, that's the old way of looking at it. In reality, it's the boundary between the warm water to its east and south and cold water to its west and north. Such language as heat transported by the Gulf Stream, well, that's meaningless. Heat is a mode of energy transport, like work. It's certainly not a seawater property that is transported by a current. I'm sure you get my drift.
Read question C. Question C. Listen to this section.
Criticism over the continued scandal is to be raised at a meeting tomorrow with National Health Service bosses. The problem seems to be mixed-sex wards. This has mostly involved complaints from women being forced to share wards with men. Actually, in keeping with the new guidelines, about 99% of hospital trusts claim to have already done away with such wards. The Health Secretary has been warned that little more can be done about the situation.
Now, listen to this again and then answer the question.
Criticism over the continued scandal is to be raised at a meeting tomorrow with National Health Service bosses. The problem seems to be mixed-sex wards. This has mostly involved complaints from women being forced to share wards with men. Actually, in keeping with the new guidelines, about 99% of hospital trusts claim to have already done away with such wards. The Health Secretary has been warned that little more can be done about the situation.
Read question D. Question D. Listen to this section.
They were photographed going down the road. Barbara and John Mayhill initially received a ticket after a speed camera photographed them breaking the speed limit. But then they told authorities that they were on their way to hospital, where Barbara gave birth to their first baby, a little girl. Police cancelled the fine. Instead, they sent them a toy police officer in uniform, holding a speed camera. Police also recommended, mind you, did not demand, they just recommended, that the couple put the original speeding camera photo into their daughter's first photo album. Now, isn't that sweet?
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
They were photographed going down the road. Barbara and John Mayhill initially received a ticket after a speed camera photographed them breaking the speed limit. But then they told authorities that they were on their way to hospital, where Barbara gave birth to their first baby, a little girl. Police cancelled the fine. Instead, they sent them a toy police officer in uniform, holding a speed camera. Police also recommended, mind you, did not demand, they just recommended, that the couple put the original speeding camera photo into their daughter's first photo album. Now, isn't that sweet?
Read question E. Question E, listen to this section.
Not the place to go mountaineering. Lesland got stuck on Table Mountain in Cape Town, South Africa. With two friends, he began to walk down the mountain. The other two decided to return to the cable car, but he felt he could continue the walk alone. He took a wrong turn and fell 100 feet, but landed on a ledge. He called his granddad back in Britain for help. His granddad looked up the number of the local mountain rescue team on the internet and called them for help. That's another success for the mobile phone.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
Not the place to go mountaineering. Lesland got stuck on Table Mountain in Cape Town, South Africa. With two friends, he began to walk down the mountain. The other two decided to return to the cable car, but he felt he could continue the walk alone. He took a wrong turn and fell 100 feet, but landed on a ledge. He called his granddad back in Britain for help. His granddad looked up the number of the local mountain rescue team on the internet and called them for help. That's another success for the mobile phone.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. In addition, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.